Chapter 3 of When Thief Meets Thief by Harry Stephen Keeler. Kangaroo Court. For I did not get out as I had blithely supposed. I never even left the cursed cell till one certain day when I was whisked down some stone corridors and up and down some winding stairways and into a huge room studded with dripping stone pillars. It was full of men, some in brilliant uniforms, all speaking a language which I couldn't understand. Improvised planks and barrels and a makeshift judge's bench showed that it was a temporary courtroom. They held some kind of trial with a jury of the hardest-looking men I'd ever seen. I attempted to expostulate. A greasing-looking man with a huge mustache said, "Keep quiet. Me, I am your attorney. I take good care for you." In due course, the jury went out and came back in 3 minutes. A lot of talking followed, and I was brought back to Cape Town Slim and Laughing Sam, and that night I learned from a turnkey who spoke a little English the bitter fact. I had been condemned to death for the murder of a Spanish girl found stabbed to death in the park. They had assigned deposition of 3 police witnesses who swore they had found the dagger, cleansed carefully, fingerprints hidden in the closet of my hotel room. Also, the deposition of 2 men who had seen me on the lonely park bench the night before the killing, quarreling bitterly with the girl. They even had a typewritten confession signed by me in which I had thrown myself upon the mercy of the court, and because of that confession, the judge, hypocritical viper, had ordered clemency of the rope instead of the torture of the spike-studded garret, in case the jury found me guilty. Damned farce, all of it. For several of the jurymen were fast asleep while the case was going on, but the whole 12 proclaimed me guilty and mercifully gave me the rope instead of the steel garret. That was all I knew, and I lived in a state of shell shock for 48 hours. And finally, a few days later, they took Slim out, took him somewhere in the old Cabildo. He was gone about 2 hours. Then they brought him back. And when the door changed, he motioned me over. "I picked up the whole lowdown on your case, buddy," he told me gravely, "and a little on mine. I was just up for more interrogation in front of some kind of a military bigwig around here, that's all. I bet myself I'm to be tried after you're knocked off, so it'll have to mean life for me in some dungeon, so's I don't get word out about you. But about you, well, you see, I've never yet let on to any of them, or them that I speak this lingo. I've kept that one little fact back, so they let me sit in the side room whilst a couple of their plainclothes coppers talk near me. Buddy, they jobbed you all right. This white senorita was, it seems, the mistress of every police and political higher-up in this town. She played them all, the little fool. And when they all finally commenced comparing notes and found what she'd done, they decided she'd have to take a ride, a la American. So a couple of their local hoods, armed with rubber gloves, squeezed her gold-digging hand about a dagger to get her FPs on it, slipped the dagger between her ribs late that night and right in her quarters, and lugged her across a lane and set her up in the park on a bench with a phony suicide note to be found with her. They themselves got bumped off by the powers that be 1 hour after they copped their payoff, for it seems they bungled the case, and a bird and an ex-dick and a member of the politico-military gang who inspected it found the bungle, for she was left-handed, and the dagger hole was on the right side. On the wrong side, that is. Moreover, it was a bit too far back for her to hand to reach. Her knock-off, then, had to be, obviously, a bump-off. The dick used his brains, drew out the dagger, and copped the phony suicide note. Now, since it had to be a bump-off, this politico-military gang had to have a scapegoat. Before a certain bright mouthpiece for the minority party, suspecting the truth, tried to put the heat on them. The scapegoat might easily have been me, only I was already apparently in limbo. They picked on you, newcomer, under surveillance ever since you got here. and no passport. That name you wrote on the bottom of that sheet was the signature to your confession typed in later above it. Every man Jack on that jury was a police or military henchman. The judge was the lousiest bastard of his kind in all South America. They held a trial down here so that nobody but their own gang could be present. Not a word's been in the papers, so the consuls know nothing. The morning after you're hung, your confession, which absolutely clinches the fake testimony, is to be published, and this, buddy, is the lowdown. I gulped. I was young and soft, and only 25 years old. But why, Slim, are they waiting? Because, Slim told me, it seems that in all these banana republics an execution, an entry order into stir for life term or an extradition is not percent legal or 100% illegal unless the big bug, and you know now, of course, who he is inside the boundary lines and technically appealable to. Though just try to appeal, eh? And this devil has been all this time in Europe at a spa, treating his goddamn precious heart whilst Cape Town Slim sits here in pain with his own heart. This fellow's in with them all, but he's got to be on this side of the boundary line, else the minority party here, which controls the one bench that administers breaches of office, can cast everyone involved with that execution out of office. That is, of course, after they've learned of it. So in the meantime, the buzzards that are in waiting on the head of the buzzards return. So you're safe for a while. And then what? I asked helplessly. Then what? Cape Town Slim said. He shrugged his shoulders. Never cross a bridge, lad, till you reach it. There's more things happen in this old world than you ever dreamed of. From what I hear, it's a long time off yet, and something may happen. All right, sit down, he ordered, and take your today's lesson. For now that they've given us this soapbox to eat our stinking horse meat stew off of, and we've got a sort of a model of a safe, we're going to a hell of a sight faster. And the grand old iron worker is going to make an expert cribman out of you on the one chance in a million that you might get out of this country. Though frankly, I'm doing it really to keep myself from going balmy. So let's see. Where are we? Yesterday was lesson 44. How the V-door is wedged open for the seepage of the soup, in case you haven't got wedge, nor knife, nor even safety razor blade. Boy, that lesson was worth a £20 note in itself, and today we'll go into something new, torching. And if you'll consider our soapbox a chilled steel cannonball safe which can't be blown, I'll show you exactly how to find the little old point, Achilles' heel himself, where the acetylene jet can eat through in half the time. Ready now? I might as well, I returned desperately. Either that or go crazy. Crazy, moaned Sam, for this was one of his bad days. It's me, Laughing Sam, who's gone crazy. I claws to hell and gone, Slim, and yeah, I gonna die this night, for I suffering so that I's just gonna kill myself with my own hands. I will.